complain that their profits have decreased. Well, that's what happens when you make it too expensive to live there. Simple economics should show that empty spaces lower profit. The other two parks in his group have just a small number of spaces, but the residents have asked not to discuss them for fear of the information being traced back to them and making them targets for even more intimidation. This is for a form of elder abuse, and it exists in your jurisdiction. Just recently in March, the residents of a 97 space park received a 5-year lease as usual, but the lease provided no other options such as a 1-year duration or a month-to-month option required by the mobile home residency law. And at the end of the lease, the lease period, the rent goes up to market rate, which is solely decided by the park owner. Many of the residents of this park will not be able to survive 5 years and will be forced out of their homes. And if they do survive at the end of the lease, the rent will skyrocket, and these old folks will still be in trouble. 5 years older and forced to pay an exorbitant rent or move. Incidentally, moving a mobile home can cost up to $15,000, and they are never quite the same afterwards. The vultures are circling. We need your help. Now, what are you going to do to help us? Thank you.
Thank you. Sally Studer?
I'm Sally Studer. I reside in Morningside Mobile Home Park in the county. Some of you may not be aware just what is contained in the leases that are being offered to these seniors. In all leases, residents lose the right to hire an attorney to fight illegal actions by the park owner. Leases also state that if any portion of the lease is proven to be illegal, all the other portions remain valid. In one instance, after the residents were made aware of the law for 1 year or month-to-month lease, the park owner offered a 1-year lease. But this lease requires a security deposit, even from the long-term residents, in the amount of the park's higher incoming rent. This deposit is non-refundable until the homeowner vacates the park. No interest is paid, and this amounts to over $53,000 for the park owner. And should the homeowner be fortunate enough to find a buyer, the park owner can demand that certain things be done in the home and site before it can be sold. Who determines those things? The park owner at its sole discretion. The owner of this park is a member of WMA. The same WMA that's appeared to you before you many times, citing the hardship that rent stabilization would create for the park owners. Although their representative is quick to deny any sort of relationship with the LS, it is clear that their actions are right in line with the LS's way of doing things. They have a very strong lobby in Sacramento, just like the LS, constantly trying to gut the mobile home residence laws and destroy any rental laws throughout the state. A park containing 49 spaces was sold after being inherited. 15 renters were evicted, lots were stripped of homes, trees, and all landscaping. As each space was cleared, a new manufactured home was brought in, and the cost of preparation was charged to the purchase of the new home. When residents forced out with the rent increase or add to that number, the result is now 3 new homes that vacant unsold. Existing resident space rents rose to $475 plus water and septic tank charges were added, making an increase of $185 in 3 years, far above the CPI. The last home buyer's rent was again higher, and their water and sewage charge was up. Some of the new homes are set illegally over septic tanks. Lot size is increased by taking land from existing residents adjacent to the new sites. These new homes have been set on the property backwards, sideways, any way they can cram them on the lot. Residents hoping to sell their homes were told that upon the sale of the home, it would have to be removed from the park. The situation became so difficult that the residents were forced to hire an attorney to protect themselves from this illegal action. This park is just one of many parks in the county that are experiencing the same or similar illegal tactics. In all fairness, it should be stated that not all park owners have succumbed to this disease, but it is only a matter of time. As homeowners in the county, I am sure as you are, how would you react if your mortgage holder increased your payments on a month-to-month basis? At what point would you stand up and fight? What past that point to move homeowners in this county? You are the only ones with the power to help us. The last two parks listed on the summary of parks we've provided you with are self-explanatory, and the rents are being raised again. No one should be in the position of having to live in a worse environment than what would be allowed at the pound. Can you, as the supervisor of the Stanislaus County, stand by and watch this happen? The time for rent stabilization ordinance is now. The Modesto City Council sees the need and they are taking action. The task is here before you. The vultures circling, coyotes wait at the edge of the orchard. What you do here will either drive the predators away or serve them up the distance. The choice is yours. Thank you.
Thank you. Ray Newman.
Gentlemen, I suppose by this time you're pretty sick and tired of all the turmoil over the mobile home rents. Well, I can tell you that I and the other residents of mobile home parks are pretty sick and tired of it, too. We're sick and tired of seeing our elderly and disabled friends forced to walk away from their homes. We're sick and tired of elder abuse in the form of threats, intimidation, and fear perpetrated on the homeowners if they dare to complain about anything. We're sick and tired of substandard parks with serious health problems that continue to increase rents without addressing these problems. We're sick and tired of being forced to decide whether to pay the huge rent increase, eat, or purchase medicines to keep us alive because there's little or no money left after the rent increase. We're sick and tired of facing opposition from those who would rather have no restrictions on rental increases than allow seniors to remain in the homes they purchased to live out their last years in peace and independence. We're sick and tired of facing the possibility that we must give up our homes and become a burden on the taxpayer. We're sick and tired of being unable to sell our homes because the park owners demand unreasonable rents, illegal credit search fees, and sensitive personal information from anyone wishing to purchase them. We're sick and tired of seeing for sale signs and empty lots where there once were friends who watched out for each other and kept their homes and lots well maintained. We're sick and tired of seeing all the park owners tarred with the same brush. And I'm sure those park owners who keep their rents at reasonable level are pretty sick and tired of it too. We're sick and tired of the stress and emotional upset that we deal with each day because of this situation. And we're sick and tired of attending meetings where nothing gets done. Supervisors, we're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. We're some of the people who voted for you and whom you have sworn to represent, and we're sick and tired of not getting any consideration in this fight. So you can take the path of least resistance, cave into special interests, and just toss the whole thing out, abandon the elderly and infirm, and pat yourselves on the back for avoiding a controversial decision. Or you can choose to enact the dreaded rent stabilization ordinance, protect the future of mobile homeowners, and probably you and they will eventually get over being sick and tired. It's up to you, gentlemen. But let me suggest that if you decide against the rent stabilization ordinance, that you periodically visit some of the mobile parks in your jurisdiction and get a look at some folks who will really be sick and tired, if there are any of them left. Thank you.
Senator, what park do you live in? Any other member of the audience wish to speak under public comment from the floor on any item that is not on today's agenda? Morning, Chair.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Sheriff Adam Christensen. I just want to take a moment to publicly acknowledge and thank the Lacey and Connor Search and Rescue Fund for their generous donation of a piece of equipment that's going to be very, very valuable to our dive team. If you'll refer to item B6 of your consent calendar, this is an expensive piece of equipment that will significantly benefit the sheriff's dive team in that we can use this scanning sonar device to identify underwater hazards and high target or high probability targets before actually sending divers into the water. This piece of equipment significantly increases officer safety and the risks that our divers take every year in call-outs to either do body recoveries or search for evidence in a lot of our waterways where underwater visibility is near zero at certain times of the year. This piece of equipment will allow us to safely accomplish our mission, and I just wanted to take a moment to thank the Lacey and Connor Search and Rescue Fund for their generous donation. I'm not sure if there's any representatives here today. I'm told there were going to be, but seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other member of the audience wish to comment up during public comment? Seeing none, we'll move to consent calendar. I have a request to pull item B7 for a separate discussion and separate vote. Are there any other items to discuss this morning? Seeing none, is there a motion to adopt consent calendar left item B7?
Also move.
I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Item B7.
Yes, I've asked Sonia Harrington to answer a couple questions relating to this matter. As she approaches the podium, I think that the relevant issue that I am aware of is a question of establishing a sunset date for the bulky item pickup, both the assessment and the duration of the special project or special pickup program.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien and members of the board. I understand I had a discussion with one of the board members regarding a potential sunset date for the bulky item collection. We did not include that in this item. I am more than willing to discuss it. I do have a couple of concerns about putting a sunset date on a particular service that we're offering to the community. When we increase our services, especially related to garbage collection or programs that are offered in garbage collection, we often find it difficult to take those services back once those services have been offered. The bulky item collection is one of the most requested services in our to our office as something that is desired by the customers in the unincorporated area. The other concern that I have regarding potential sunset is if, which we believe a portion of our franchise haulers will have to incur capital costs in order to implement this program, we will have to pay for those capital costs should we discontinue the program. So the ratepayers will still be paying for those capital costs over the life of that equipment, even if the program is not being implemented in the unincorporated area.
I have some questions, please, and I'm the one that had the conversation with her on this. There are several things that concern me. Number one, when we were discussing this, I asked how many people would be using the services. At that time, you said between 25 and 27,000. That was the figure you gave me.
That's how many accounts we have in the, approximately how many accounts we have in the unincorporated area.
You also stated that I asked you how many do you believe would use the service, and at that time you didn't have a number, which was fine. And so I then brought up the fact that why don't we just do it over a two-year period to see if people are going to utilize the program or not. And at that time, you seemed receptive. If people are using it, great. If they aren't, why, I don't see a need to carry the program on. The issue which you brought up about additional equipment that needed to be purchased, I asked you about that subject. And you stated that they already had the equipment. Because that was the point I was asking about for the two-year sunset. And you assured me that they had most of the equipment already in use. So I have a little problem with your two objections. The other thing which really disturbs me is that you and I had this conversation
a number of weeks ago. When you left me with the impression that there would be a review in 2 years. If you come up with additional problems or questions, why did you not come back and inform me on it? And you had plenty of time.
Yes, I did, and that was a mistake on my part.
Well,
that's a grave error.
So far, I'm having a little difficulty with your answers. I mean, first, you gave me answers which I asked. Now you're reversing them. I am still asking that we have a 2-year sunset. I did not use the term sunset at the time of our discussion, but I do believe the sunset is best because if it is of value, then we vote on it again. If it's just to review, it can slip by and there are other problems involved. So I am requesting that there be a 2-year sunset, and then we'll see if it has merit or if it doesn't have merit. But you might come back to me and explain to me why you've now come up with different numbers when I asked about the capitalization of those that are, if they needed equipment. Because I did discuss that with you, and I'd like further clarification.
Okay, we've had multiple discussions with the franchise companies, and I can get the specific franchise companies that will have to make capital improvements. I can get that information to you.
Okay.
I believe that half of the companies have excess capacity and will not have to purchase, but it was brought to our attention that they believe that at least one, if not two, of the companies will have to purchase some additional equipment in order to accommodate.
Well, I greatly appreciate you bringing that information to me.
Supervisor Grover?
It appears to me that what we were being asked to do is to appoint a public hearing to discuss this today, and it would seem that some of these answers could be worked out in the meantime.
Well, I think my major problem is we had a discussion, an agreement. If you're going to discuss these things with the idea that we're going to have a sunset, I believe if someone comes to my office and gives me information, I accept their word. And then not coming back and correct it, I am not a very happy camper with this situation at all.
Okay. In the agenda item, put this on the agenda on July 31st, and I would just offer my suggestion to staff that this will be an item that will be discussed at great length, I would suppose.
Thank you.
I'd like to move for approval.
Have a motion?
A second.
And a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Moving on to item B11. Consideration proposal from Doctors Medical Center to purchase Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board. I'm Denise Hunt, Behavioral Health Director. And I'm here today to talk to you about consideration of a proposal from Doctors Medical Center to purchase Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center. The first several slides I'm going to go through pretty quickly because this is not new information, but this does give background on the actions that we're recommending to your board today. Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center, or SBHC, is a 67-bed acute psychiatric hospital operated by Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. In order to claim Medi-Cal and Medicare funds for inpatient psychiatric services, SBHC must be licensed under an acute care hospital. In 1997, Doctors Medical Center, or BMC, became the licensee for the Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center. That was the time of the transition from Stanislaus Medical Center. In 2000, the federal government introduced revised requirements for facilities that are affiliated with parent hospitals, and these are called provider-based rules. SBHC's relationship with BMC, which is the licensing facility, met the rules in effect in 1997 when the agreement was negotiated originally. But when the federal government changed the regulations in the year 2000, we didn't meet all of those regulations. At that time, SBHC was essentially grandfathered in to allow continued operation under DMC's hospital license, and the county received a letter from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, in 2003, advising us that until a final determination was made, the county could continue to receive provider-based reimbursement, which allowed us to receive Medi-Cal and Medicare payment for services. SBHC currently provides inpatient psychiatric services for Stanislaus County residents who are uninsured or underinsured. We provide services for individuals covered by Medi-Cal or Medicare, services for individuals with private health insurance, and also services for patients of other California counties when beds are available. We're required to provide assessment of persons believed to be a danger to self, others, or gravely disabled, and this commonly occurs through a period of hospitalization. In addition, we're required to provide medically necessary mental health services, including hospitalization, to eligible Medi-Cal beneficiaries for Stanislaus County. And in order to meet these requirements, we need access to hospital services. So at this point today, SBHC continues to receive provider-based funding under the 2003 letter from CMS. County representatives met over a period of years repeatedly with our federal representatives and CMS to try to resolve SBHC's provider-based issues, and these efforts were unsuccessful. In early 2006, DMC requested a determination from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services to clarify SBHC's provider-based status. We don't believe it's likely that the Federal Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, will find in our favor. The consequence of this is that SBHC would no longer qualify for federal Medicare and Medi-Cal funding. As a result, this circumstance set into motion negotiations with DMC related to the continued provision of acute psychiatric hospital services in Stanislaus County. After an August 15, 2006 public hearing, the Board of Supervisors authorized exploration of either the sale of SBHC operations or conversion of SBHC to a subacute psychiatric hospital. And at that point, negotiations commenced. Mr. Robinson is going to pick up the presentation at this point.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the Board of Supervisors. I will continue with this discussion outlining the results of the ongoing conversations and negotiations with Doctors Medical Center. As a result of the August 15, 2006 public hearing and subsequent discussions, the board held a public hearing on April 24, 2007. During that public hearing, the board authorized a request for proposals for the sale of SBHC property and operations with proposals due by June 26, 2007. We did receive one proposal from Doctors Medical Center. DMC's proposal included a number of elements. The first is to purchase the land, which would include the excess land and the buildings of SBHC, for $10,949,000. A condition to that price was that the county would repair the roof and the chiller. Second is DMC would purchase the equipment from the county for an amount not to exceed $168,500 based upon a fair market value appraisal. Additionally, they would purchase supplies and inventory from the county at appraised fair market value. They'd negotiate and enter into a settlement and release agreement with the county to resolve all issues regarding past, present, and future claims and liabilities that Doctors Medical Center may owe Medi-Cal disproportionate share of payments to the county. DMC currently has licensure for operating an acute psychiatric facility, so they do meet this condition. They have financial ability to purchase the land and operations. They have demonstrated that. DMC has the ability to immediately commence facility operations and the ability to comply with all of the terms and conditions of the request for proposals. This time, staff is requesting authority to proceed with negotiations related to the sale, including the sales contract and other agreements required. We're requesting that you set a public hearing for July 31st, 2007, followed by a 30-day referendum period prior to an ordinance authorizing the sale of this property. On July 2nd, 2007, the City of Modesto Planning Commission did meet and make a determination that the proposed transfer of SBHC to Doctors Medical Center is in conformity with the city's general plan. The proposed sale will allow proceeds to be available to reduce the existing operational deficit of SBHC and lessen any county general fund contribution that would otherwise be required by BHRS. An existing acute psychiatric hospital, as we've discussed on numerous occasions in the past, would continue in operation in Stanislaus County, which we do believe is a significant benefit to the residents of our community. The CEO and BHRS will return to the board at a future meeting with details of the use of the revenues from the sale after we complete the sales process. Sale of SBHC and its operations would require BHRS to purchase beds from Doctors Medical Center or others for an annual cost of estimated at $11,575,550. We currently have identified available state and federal revenues for the services estimated to be $10,287,324, which leaves an estimated net county cost on a go-forward basis of $1,288,226.
I'm going to talk about the staffing impact of this. To make this level of change in how psychiatric services are provided at SDHC is going to have a significant staffing impact for the county, and it will require a reduction in force of county employees. There are currently 122 allocated full-time positions in the SDHC budget unit. Seven of these we're recommending to be transferred to BHRS. These are psychiatrist positions. That leaves 115 positions. Of those 115, 67 are currently filled and 48 are vacant. There are also approximately 45 part-time extra health and contract employees who will be affected in addition. And this is obviously a significant number of individuals being affected. Let me tell you a little bit about how we've been preparing for this. BHRS leadership and the CEO's office's Human Resources Division have been meeting with labor organizations since last summer. Departments have been asked throughout the county to hold vacancies as potential landing positions for individuals affected. And BHRS has maintained funded vacancies. We currently have 25 vacant funded positions available within our department, and more may become available through turnover. Each affected employee will be met with individually to outline employment options. And I should say that the reduction in force policy and process is highly individualized. It's based on individual seniority with the county and a number of other factors. So it's very individualized in terms of how it actually affects the individual employee. DMC will also have the opportunity to meet with impacted employees to talk about potential employment opportunities. Assuming this transaction goes forward, DMC will need a skilled workforce to operate SBHC. And our hope is that at the close of this transition, that most, if not all, full-time employees affected by this change will be employed, if not by the county, by DMC. Mr. Robinson is going to complete the presentation to talk to you about the recommendation.
Before I move into recommendations, I do want to take just a moment to recognize Denise Hunt and her staff for the outstanding work they have done keeping SBHC operating during a time of transition and during a time that's been very, very challenging for the professional staff and support staff at SBHC. And so my compliments, my appreciation. I would also like to mention that the numbers relative to the number of vacancies and the number of field positions will be a moving target. We expect that we'll have additional vacancies. You will note, if you compare two reports, that there's a one position difference in the comparison of filled versus vacant positions. That number changes potentially even on a daily basis, as it did in this case. The really relevant number is 115 full-time funded allocated positions that would be deleted. The amount filled will change, as I had indicated. Staffing recommendations. First, that the board consider the proposal of the sale of SBHC, including the operations, real property, improvements, and equipment to Doctors Medical Center. Second, that you authorize the Chief Executive Officer, Behavioral Health Director, and all other officers, employees, and agents of the county to commence negotiations relating to the potential sale of SBHC. Third, that you set a public hearing on July 31st, 2007 at 9:30 a.m. to consider the approval of the sale of SBHC and to introduce, waive the first reading, and adopt an ordinance authorizing the sale of SBHC. Fourth, that you approve the reduction in force of 67 filled and 48 vacant positions in the SBHC budget unit, effective no earlier than September 1st, 2007, and no later than October 1st, 2007, as outlined in Attachment A. Five, that you approve the transfer of 7 positions from the SBHC budget unit to the BHRS budget unit, effective no earlier than September 1st, 2007, and no later than October 1st, 2007, as outlined in Attachment A. Six, that you amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the recommended changes as outlined in this report. And seven, that you find that the proposed sale of the property will result in economic benefit to the county. That does conclude our report and staff recommendations.
Are there any questions for staff? At this point, does any member of the audience wish to comment on this agenda item? We'll bring it back to the board. It's always a tough decision to make when we're looking at something that has this many consequences. But the result is we can't afford not to do this. We need to keep these services available here in Stanislaus County. If we don't and this closes, our citizens in Stanislaus County will have to go elsewhere for treatment. And to me, that's just not an option. Any board comment? If not, I'm looking for a motion.
Also moved.
I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. I'm sorry, Supervisor Gray. All right. And I wanted to thank Denise Hunt also for all her work on this. Item B12, approval to accept the elections office certification of the results of the initiative petition on Salida Area Planning, Road Improvement, Economic Development, and Farmland Protection Initiative.
Good morning, Chairman, Board of Supervisors. Very nice to be here today. I'm Lee Lundergan, Stanislaus County Clerk Recorder, Registrar of Voters. I'm here today to bring before you the results of a petition that was recently brought to our office, and we were asked to review. We haven't had an opportunity to do so. It was brought to our office on June 18th, 2007. At that time, it had 842 sections to it. Each of those sections contained signatures, which were unverified, and the members filed their proponent of 29,207. We have taken a 3% tear on those, which was 877 signatures. We found that 710 of them were deficient, which means they were registered voters in Stanislaus County. 167 were not sufficient, and the total number needed to qualify for placement on the ballot was 626. Plus, there were sufficient numbers to place it on the ballot. I do want to bring to your attention that this is a 20%, not a 10% number of signatures, and therefore it gives three options to the board, and those options are under Election Code 9118. The election indicates that you may adopt the ordinance without alteration, either at the regular meeting and or 10 days after it is presented. B, you may immediately call a special election pursuant to subdivision A of section 1405, Or C, you may order a report pursuant to section 9111 at the regular meeting. And those are your three options.
Any questions for our clerk recorder?
I believe that this item, this agenda item, we're just supposed to accept this report.
Yeah, we're looking at
and not deal with those options.
Yeah, we have a two-step process. First, we'll accept her certification, and then the second agenda item will be consideration of action of what step we're going to take.
Okay, that was my understanding.
Supervisor Grover.
I'd just like to thank Ms. Lendergan for diligently pursuing this and getting it back to us in a real timely manner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank my staff for doing that. They had not only a number of petitions to go through, there were 29,000 names, but there were also over close to 4,000 new registrant affidavits that had to be entered to achieve this. So it was very hard. I want to thank them.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'd like to move for approval.
And before you do that, I do have a request to speak on item B12 from Jan Moore. And it's a two-step process. I'm not sure if you want to talk about the exception of the certification or if you wanted to talk about the consideration of action, which of the three steps we're going to take.
Let me ask a question, Lee, before you leave.
Yes.
Okay. Today we're accepting your count and stuff, right?
That is correct. The certification and the count.
Okay. That's all we're doing.
To my knowledge, that's what I bring before you. And you have three options to take on that. But I'm not bringing those options. I'm indicating you have those options.
Okay. Okay. On the first vote, do we...
First vote is to accept her results.
I understand that. Okay. Okay.
I do have a couple of things I'd like to address today before I leave. So I don't know if you want to listen to Ms. Moore first or if you wanted to have me address them first.
Well, you're there.
They're on a variety of issues. One of the things I did want to bring before the board's attention is that the next group election, our UDEL election, Unified District Election, our election, is going to take place on November 6, 2007. And the nomination period, which means period for anyone running for that office or for any initiatives or for any measures to go on the ballot, that time period is between July 16th and August the 10th. So August the 10th is the final date for putting any kind of candidate or measure on the ballot. And the next election would be the presidential primary election, which would be February 5th, 2008. On a totally different basis, but something I wanted to bring before you, I just wanted to let you know that there, as we all know, there has been a terrible fire in Lake Tahoe, and that has affected a lot of the individuals who live up there. There was an executive order that does affect our office and our county, and it was forced by Governor Schwarzenegger, Executive Order F-0807. And I'm going to just read the one paragraph that does affect our office, the County Clerk, Recorder, and Registrar of Voters Office. It is hereby ordered that Health and Safety Code Sections 103525.5 and 103625 and Penal Code Section 14251 requiring the imposition of fees are hereby suspended with regard to any request for copies of certificates of birth, death, fetal death, and marriage or marriage dissolution records by any individual who lost such records as a result of the wildfire, and it is hereby ordered that the copies be provided without charge. And I do want to let you know that as you are in charge of the money for the county.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lee, let me ask you one before you decide to leave there.
Yes.
Okay, the one in November, is that a general election?
That is a primary election.
A primary election, okay.
Correct.
Okay, all right, Judge.
Did I say general? I apologize if I did.
Okay, so then...
There's so many coming up. There's four coming up in 1 year, so...
No, I'm going to ask the county, the attorney up here about the... So that the first thing that the initiative was put on was the SOS.
That is correct.
Okay, but that has to be put on in a general election. Is that my understanding?
My understanding was it had to be put on a statewide.
A statewide
election.
Okay, so it had to be statewide then.
That is my understanding.
So it wouldn't be something that would be put on November.
Well, November is a county election. It is not statewide. There are many counties within the state of California not having elections in November. There is not a special issue being placed on thus far by the governor, And so at this point in time, it is not a statewide election. It is a county election.
Do you want to tell us about that?
I think you're going to take that.
Okay.
Then
you're going to talk about
questions.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Lee. Jan Moore. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Jan Moore. I live on Silverstone Circle in Salida. And I'm part of the leadership committee for the Salida Now campaign. First of all, we'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone who signed our Salida Now petition. We were overwhelmed at the positive response that we received countywide. In only 16 short days, more than 29,000 people signed the initiative. It's my understanding that this is unprecedented. As residents of Salida trying to create a bright future for our community, we appreciate the many people in the community and elsewhere in the county for helping us get closer toward our desired goals for our community. I'm a fairly new resident of Salida, having lived here in 2001. Since moving here, I've heard overwhelming criticism of the planning or lack of planning in Stanislaus County. And I'm not talking just about county planning. It would be hard to count the number of stories and letters to the editor of the Modesto Bee about traffic congestion and poor planning in the city of Modesto. I've become very involved with Salida Now. Having been a member of the City of Woodland Planning Commission for 10 years, I know good, smart planning when I see it. This is a plan with a vision for residents not only of Salida but of the entire region. This vision has been in process for 10 years. This is our chance to do it right. Through the initiative, we strive to plan for not just a better Salida, but also for a better region. We know of no plan enacted or proposed in Stanislaus County that equals this contribution, and we hope that it sets in motion a more proactive approach to dealing with our regional planning issues. Provisions to address regional transportation problems, to provide a balance between agriculture and urbanized uses, to fix ongoing fiscal deficits in Salida so that the critical county resources can be used elsewhere, and to stem the tide of employers leaving our area by promoting and subsidizing infrastructure-ready job lands will go a long way towards setting a new standard for our region's future. I'm 65 now, so logic tells me that I probably won't be around to see the end result of this plan. But our children and grandchildren will benefit greatly. I urge you to become informed and to join me in support of the Salida Now initiative. We're proud of our proposal. We're proud of Salida. Passage of Salida Now allows for the potential of significant benefits locally and countywide. We respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak on this agenda item, which is accepting the certification of the results? Seeing none, we'll move back to the board. Any further questions on this item? Is there a motion to proceed?
No.
Motion by Supervisor Monteith? I'm sorry? Oh, you're right, I do.
Okay.
I have a motion by Supervisor Grove that's on the table.
Second.
Would you like to second that?
Yes.
Second by Supervisor Monteith. Thank you very much. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Now we're going to move to agenda item B13, which would be consideration of action on the initiative petition for Salida area. This was, now we'll have our three options, and Bolivar County Council will present those.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, prior to detailing the three options that are presented to the board on today's date, I would like to, I think, address some of the concerns that I think Supervisor Mayfield have and give a very brief description of the factors that determine when initiatives are actually placed on the ballot or come before the board to take action. There are four separate and distinct factors that come into play, and they're set forth in state law that regulates when initiatives will come to the board for the actions we'll describe momentarily. The first action is when the initiative petitions are provided to the clerk recorder's office for review and verification. And that date is critical because that's the first date that sets in motion various actions and application of various state laws. In this particular initiative that you will discuss today, this was introduced earlier. The petitions were filed earlier than the 30-year land use restriction initiative, and that's important, and I'll explain that just a little bit later. The second important factor is the operation of the clerk reporter's office when they receive the petitions. As the clerk reporter described today, there's a various process that they must go through to verify the petitions. And under state law, Lee Linderman and her staff have up to 30 days in which to complete that process. To the credit of Lee Linderman and her staff, on any initiative since she has been clerk reporter, they have acted in a very quick manner, and the review has taken substantially less than 30 days. And approximately, she's cut it actually in half the time. So as she could have taken a full 30 days, she's taken about half that time, as she did in this particular initiative that's before you. That is important because that sets forth the second critical date where the verification comes in. But the third and important factor that Lee Leonard and her staff do, and it relates to what the board can do, relates to the counting of the petitions. And the law sets forth and differentiates between petition gatherers that gather 10% of the voters that have voted at the last governor's election. And in this particular instance, the SLIDA planning initiative, those that gather 20% of the individuals that voted in the last election. And that 10% and 20% are important because it then allows the governing body, be it this board or city council, various actions that they can take. And those actions are different if it's a 10% or a 20%. So in this particular instance, it is a 20%, it exceeded the 20%. So because of that, then the code section comes into play, which is different than the code section that applied to the 30-year land use restriction initiative. They only garnered 10%. So this garnered 20% that's before you today under SLIDE initiative, plan initiative, and therefore this board now has three options. The option number one is to adopt the initiative without alteration at this meeting or at a subsequent meeting that has to be within 10 days after today's date. Option two, this board could immediately call a special election. And because it is 20%, this election, if this board chooses to place it before the electorate, will be before the November 6th, 2000 election. And that's because state law has a specific number of days when this particular item, because they receive the 20%, can be set. So you apply that law to the facts and you come up with a November 6, 2007 date. The third option the board has is to order a report pursuant to Code Section 911 at this meeting. The board has ordered these impact statements previously on other initiatives, including the 30-year land use restriction ordinance, and that's what staff is recommending to you today. If the board does order such a report, here are the items that it will cover. First, the initiative will look at the initiative's fiscal impact. Look at the initiative's consistency with the county's general plan and specific plan, including the housing element. You'll look at the initiative's effect of use of land, impact on availability and location of housing, and the ability of the county to meet its housing regional housing needs. The initiative will be reviewed to the impact on funding for infrastructure, including transportation, schools, parks, and open space. The initiative will be reviewed on the community's ability, on Salinas community ability, to attract and retain business and employment. The initiative will also be reviewed to look at the uses of impact on vacant parcels of land, and then it could include any other matters that the Board of Supervisors wish to put in. This Under state law, this report has to be brought back for consideration by the board if the board orders one within 30 days. If that happens, it will be brought back on the August 7th meeting for board consideration. Now, if the board does order the report, then on August 7th, the board now will have two options. And those options are, number one, to again adopt the initiative at that time or within 10 days presentation to the board. Or the second option is to order that election, and that will be for November the 6th, 2007. I'll be glad to answer any questions the board members have.
Are there any questions?
I have one for the county council. If this was put on for the November election, is there going to be a cost to the county or the people that have sponsored this initiative that have to pay for that part of the election?
And I'll defer to Ms. Lundgren. I believe it's a cost to the county.
The answer to your question is there going to be a cost to the county if this is put on? The answer to that is yes. There would be a cost to the county because the code indicates that it is required to be put on within a certain amount of days. So there is a cost to the county. This is not a county-wide election. It is a county UDEL election. And just for clarification, what that means, a UDEL is a Unified District Election Law. That's what the initials stand for, election. Which means all of the various districts within Stanislaus County can determine if they wish to contract with the county and therefore have the county hold their elections for them on that date. So it is a unified date. There's no one item that completely covers the entire county. For example, the Modesto City Council race is taking place. But that is the only council races that are taking place. There are fire districts, TID, MID, school districts. If they do not have enough individuals running to warrant an election there, they are not required to go to election. Therefore, it can cover the whole county if everyone goes to election and gets on the ballot. However, if there are no indications that there are contests that take place, it is not necessarily so that it would be. This would make it a county-wide ballot. So it would reach the entire county, and there would be a cost to them, which I don't know what it would be at this time.
It would be a
cost. Just to cover that, because then that's the next question.
That's what I was going to ask. No. And the cost would be to the people who circulated the petition?
No, the cost would be the county would bear the cost.
To the county. Now, suppose it's in February, then.
February would be the next election that we are required to hold. It is a statewide election. The county does have the duty to put that election on and to pay for that election because it is a federal election. We do not have the duty to put on the November election. We actually bill the various entities that wish to be on the November election, and we send them a bill for their portion of the election. This is something that the county would have to pay for, however.
Well, if I understand you correctly, then the county is paying this regardless of its November or February election.
That is correct. However, in February, we already have an item that is going. We already are required to have a county-wide election. You're already paying for it. It's just one more item on it. This would be an entirely new requirement. There is no option, however, under the code, the way this is written, to put it in on the February ballot.
Lee, this was a countywide initiative, right?
Correct.
Okay. No, so then this would be a countywide.
We're saying initiative.
Wait.
It's a measure.
Pardon me?
I just want to make clarification. We keep using the word initiative, but it is a measure.
Okay, it's a countywide
measure. Correct.
Okay, it will be a countywide vote on whether or not SLATA becomes. Right?
That is the way it is written. That's
okay. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure that, okay, so what that does on the other one in February doesn't, if this one is taken care of in November, then the one in February will have no bearing on it at all.
That would be a question for your legal counsel.
Okay, legal counsel, tell me.
They are two entirely separate, different measures. If this measure passes in November, the measure is implemented and the provisions that are included are in that. If the measure passes in February, it is on, it's an entirely different measure that is a restrictive measure and will apply to items that occur after that date.
So what you're saying is that the initiative that was collected in earlier for SOS, okay, well then you're going to, that would disenfranchise the 16,000 votes. Is that right? I mean, if it has no bearing on Salida.
No, it would not have any. Assuming this measure is placed on the ballot in November and it
passes, yes.
Yes, it will take effect, and the measure, assuming it passes in the 30-year land use restriction,
yes.
Measure, assuming it passes in February, will have no impact on this November.
Okay.
Measure.
Any other questions? Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Does any member of the audience wish to comment on this agenda item? Seeing nobody, we'll bring it back to the board. Any comments? Supervisor Grossman.
Just briefly, I think it would be prudent for us to ask our professional staffs in the various departments to evaluate this as we have other measures in the past and give us their informed analysis before we make a decision.
I would agree.
Okay, would that be option number three?
I believe it would. It's listed here under policy issues.
Yeah, it should be under number three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supervisor DeMartini.
I would also agree with Supervisor Grover that I think the analysis of this initiative is in order. It's consistent with what we've done in the past, and I would support the option C.
Okay. Any other comments, or is there a motion?
Also move.
I have a motion by Supervisor Grover.
I'll second that, and we're going to go with option three.
Option three. Second by Supervisor Mayfield. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you. Item B14, approval to negotiate and enter an agreement with IPC Command Systems.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien and members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Krosnick. My name is Stan Risen. I'm in the Chief Executive Office. Joining me at the staff table this morning is Paul Gibson, our new Chief Information Officer. And we're here to seek your approval this morning for the county to be a party to a contract for a new integrated public safety system. And so I might start off by just explaining what an integrated public safety system is. It involves a new computer-aided dispatch system, which we commonly refer to as a CAD. It involves a records management system for the Modesto Police Department. This system will be integrated with our ICGIS, Integrated County Justice Information System. There are also some various components. It will be integrated with our fire agency softwares called Firehouse and BioKey. It's going to allow for mobile computing and field reporting for patrol officers and engines out in the field. And it involves a crime analysis tool called COPLINK that will be utilized by the Modesto Police Department and our sheriff. Probably important to start off by answering the question, why do we need a new system? Our current system is about 15 years old. And if you can just stop for a moment and think about how much technology has changed in 15 years, you realize that it's probably important that in order to really utilize some of today's map-centric technology such as GIS and the ability to exchange data, it's important to move to a more modern architectural platform. This new system will be highly integrated with our GIS system. To the point that it will have what they call AVL, automatic vehicle locators, so that a dispatcher on a map will be able to see the location of patrol cars and fire engines and various resources. The system will even be able to make recommendations as to what units are closest for dispatch and even the routes that they can take time-wise to respond to an emergency. A couple other keys about the need for a new system. The system we have now is no longer supported by the vendor, and staff feels that it has reached the end of its useful economic life. This is kind of the culmination of a rather long process. Staff has been working for years, actually, putting together this proposal and bringing it to the point of selection and award for you today. The requirements, functional requirements for the RFP had over 4,500 different requirements. So we're talking about a fairly complicated system. The RFP was issued in June of 2006, and to assist with the evaluation, we formed a project advisory committee, which was more the technical and working staff, as well as an executive committee, which were the various department heads to assist us in evaluating it. Representatives from were from Santos Regional 911 Joint Powers Authority, the Modesto Police and Fire Departments, the County Sheriff, and County Fire, and or City and County IT staff, and then the City Manager's Office and the Chief Executive Office. We received 8 proposals, and from that, the Advisory Committee narrowed it down to 4 that we felt were worthy of bringing in for demonstrations and reference checks. Those 4 were Intergraph, IPC, Versaterm, and Tritech. The Project Advisory Committee then invited each of those 4 vendors to come in for day and a half demonstrations. One of the vendors dropped out of the process, so we actually had 3 on-site demonstrations. From there, we narrowed the field to 2 finalists, and some of the technical IT staff made site visits to those 2 finalists, and we then began to request best and final offers. Once we had the best and final offers, the advisory committee formulated their recommendation, met with the executive committee, had a chance to share with them the pluses and minuses of both of the 2 finalists, and then the executive committee met and directed us to begin contract negotiations with IPC to develop a project budget and to develop a cost-sharing methodology. Why IPC was selected? Out of those 4,500 requirements, they said they could meet over 99% of them. The next highest finalist, Intergraph, claimed that they could meet about 88%. We really became important that both the site visits and the demonstrations to see if that capability really existed, and the advisory committee, after doing considerable research, is convinced that IPC is the right system for us. They had strong references. They exhibited many of the desired capabilities we were interested in. They offered a fully integrated system. We have the effective equivalent of a site license, so we're not worried about running out of capacity. And they brought in a 5-year fixed warranty. The cost is significant. This was no small project. The total project budget is approaching $3.9 million. Of that, the city's obligation is about $2.6 million. The county's $1.2 million. The difference there is the city is purchasing a records management system where the county already has our own records management system in ICGIS. And so that's why you're seeing the difference in cost there. The IPC contract specifically, which is included in the total project budget, is about a little over $3.1 million. That amount includes 2 options, both the COPLINK, which is the crime analysis tool, and a document management system for the Modesto Police Department. The project budget is, part of it is going to be funded through grants, both Burns Justice and COPS grants, of totaling about $1.2 million. The balance will be made up through city and county general fund contributions and city capital facility fees. We are before you this morning to request your authorization. We'll be before the City Council of Modesto this evening to request their authorization, both to enter into the contract and a project agreement between the county, the city, and the Joint Powers Authority. The project agreement basically outlines how we'll function together throughout the project. And we will then, in the following weeks, be going before the Joint Powers Authority to request their authorization to enter into the contract and project agreement as well. This project will take about a year and a half to 2 years to implement. It's an extremely complicated system involving multiple jurisdictions and agencies. Our recommended actions for you today are to approve the purchase of the system from IPC, authorize the Chief Executive Officer to enter into the project agreement with the City of Modesto and Stanislaus Regional 911 Joint Powers Authority. You can see the remaining recommendations dealing primarily with financial issues, including a loan of funds to the JPA to be paid back over a five-year period. In the audience this morning are Doug Roberts, Vice President and General Manager of IPC, as well as Ty Thompson, the Sales Manager for this area. I'd also like to acknowledge a significant amount of work from Gary Cook, the city's Chief Information Officer, as well as Kevin Harless, who's agreed to be the project manager for this project. And I'd like to also acknowledge the efforts of both the advisory team and executive team. I'm going to spare listing all their names, but they're numerous, and they put in a significant amount of work to bring this to the point that it's before you today. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Any questions of staff?
Yeah, I have one.
Yes.
What about they're going to cover 99% of everything, right?
We are actually including the RFP with those 4,500 plus requirements as part of the contract so we can hold them to that.
What about the 1% that doesn't cover?
Well, you know, a lot of those over 4,500 meters.
What about the 1% it doesn't cover?
They were probably wishes.
They what?
They were probably wishes and not really requirements that we had to have.
Okay. They were wishes and not requirements.
Yes.
Okay. So then we don't want to, we buy a lot of systems. God, we buy systems all the time. And all of a sudden, in a few years, they're gone. They're shot. Okay. And we can't get the vendor. We can't get anybody to fix them. We can't do this. We can't do that. And when you say, I was doing fine when you said 99%. Okay, but then all of a sudden that 1% kind of jumped into my mind and said, well, I need to know about the 1%. And does this 911 cover all the cities in Stanislaus County?
No, not all the cities. It covers all our contract cities. It covers I'm not sure if all the fire agencies. I probably ought to have someone a little more versed in the JPA respond to that. But I believe
not one.
The city of Turlock, for example, I don't believe is a part of this, at least the police department.
So that Turlock wouldn't be included in this?
I'm probably going to look for help here. Am I correct in that?
On the law enforcement side, Mr. Supervisor, the Turlock and Ceres Police Department have their own PSAP. They're on their own communication.
Yeah, I know.
As well as Oakdale.
Okay.
Everybody else would be covered by this agreement from the law enforcement perspective.
Okay. So that if you're talking about two cities that won't be covered, I just need to understand, what won't they be covered for? I mean, if 911, okay, let's just say something happens in one of those cities that aren't covered. Are they notified? Are you notified? Is he notified?
This is for the computer-aided dispatch system. 911 is still integrated throughout the county.
Throughout the county.
And those two PSAPs communicate with each other all the time.
Okay, so then we just want to make sure that we're talking about everybody in Stanislaus County.
Right. And in this case, this proposal covers the computer-aided dispatch system.
Okay.
The technology for that. With the exception of Oakdale, who
okay.
runs their own.
Okay.
And Turlock and Ceres, who are combined in one, that covers those two communities.
Okay.
Run by the City of Turlock Police Department.
Okay.
As far as 911, everybody talks to
everybody. Everybody's talking to each other.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Supervisor DeMartini?
The last system we had, you said, lasted 15 years. What would you expect the life of this system? Is it $3.9 million? Would you expect it to last 15 years before it has to be replaced?
I don't know that I could go as far out as 15 years, but we've agreed to a 10-year maintenance schedule as part of our project here, so we're anticipating at least a useful life of 10 years.
that would come out to about $400,000 a year almost. And
it may go longer. It's just, you know, the way technology changes to look beyond 10 years at this point. Like I said, we've gotten 15 years out of our current system. Whether we can do that with this new one, hopefully.
Okay, but the minimum you'd think would be 10 years.
Yes, sir.
So, one more question. Excuse me, Chairman. Okay, the warranty you're talking about, we're paying for that warranty, right? This isn't...
Correct.
Okay, so is that what he would be referring to, the $400,000 a year? Is that the warranty?
I think what Supervisor DeMartini was just looking at, if you look at the total project cost,
yeah, I know.
Divide that by 10 years, roughly your initial investment would be the equivalent of about $400,000 a year. Is that what you intended?
Yeah, I just divided it into 10.
Right. So what is this warranty cost in this? It looks like to me that when you spend that kind of money, the company should have some kind of a warranty on their own. We have to pay for the warranty?
Yes, there is a maintenance contract that's associated with this. The maintenance contract, excuse me just a minute, I'll take a look at it. For the software is about around $260,000 to $270,000 a year, and that includes any updates or upgrades associated with it. In addition, there's a hardware maintenance, and that lasts for 5 years, and then after 5 years, we'll have to purchase our own hardware, and we will do a hardware maintenance agreement with whatever companies we buy the hardware from at that point.
Okay. Any member of the public wish to speak on this agenda item? Bring it back to the board, and I just want, it's been a very long process in going through this. I remember talking about this, I think, for a solid 2 years now. And I know it's taken a lot of time, and I want to compliment both San Jose County and the City of Modesto to finally agreeing on a system that makes sense for all the agencies combined. And what we're talking about is public safety. That's what this is all about. Being able to dispatch more efficiently, more effectively, which all comes down to public safety, whether you're looking at law enforcement or fire service. So I think it is a prudent thing to do. Supervisor Grover.
Right before your 2 years of following it started, I remember a meeting where it was a different mix of people, but the group got together up on the sixth floor of the tower conference room and said, we've decided that we can't get along. We're going to go our separate ways. And so I'm very pleased that we're to this point, that the vendor has come forward and is meeting the criteria, and we look forward to a long, successful partnership.
And I might just chip in. It's been a pleasure to work with the city on this, the city's chief information officer and the advisory team. There's a real good spirit and camaraderie working together right now.
It's something that probably there'll be many opportunities to point out areas that we don't get along. This is one that we need to kind of benchmark and work back towards. Thanks.
Any other comments or a motion? I'll make a motion then to approve. Is there a second?
Okay.
A second by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to correspondence.
This board has received a portion of the 2007 Civil Grand Jury Report regarding the San Jose County Fire and Life Saving Services Disaster Preparedness and State of Law Enforcement.
Refer to Chief Executive Office and CEO Office of Emergency Services.
This board has received a letter from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the President's Major Disaster Declaration on April 20, 2007, authorizing processing of U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Services Agency emergency loans for physical and production losses for farmers and ranchers for damages incurred as a result of the January freeze in the primary counties of Kings, Madera, Merced, Stanfield, and their contiguous counties.
Refer to CEO Office of Emergency Services and Agricultural Commissioner and Sealers of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from the City of Waterford regarding their intent to exercise the option to renew the contract with San Jose County
for the next 5-year term for law enforcement services.
Refer to Chief Executive Office and the Sheriff.
This board has received a copy of the California Multi-Jurisdictional Methamphetamine Enforcement Team 5th Year Progress Report from September 2005 through October 2006.
Refer to Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a notice from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding the proposed regulatory action relating to waterfowl hunting and the dates of the upcoming public hearing.
Refer to Department of Parks and Recreation and the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a letter from the Stewardship Council regarding the draft land conservation plan that will guide the conservation ownership and management of more than 140,000 acres of Pacific Gas and Electric Company's watershed lands in perpetuity.
Refer to Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a notice from San Francisco Planning Department regarding the availability of draft program environmental impact report for the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission's Water System Improvement Program.
Refer to Department of Planning and Community Development and the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Board of Supervisors report. Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2 weeks ago, I brought up the scrap dealers ordinance that the county passed and the possibility of getting all the cities to come on board with this. I wondered if our CEO has talked to the city managers about this. I've been to Ceres twice about this, and they said that they were going to do it, and Newman is, and I'm on the agenda for Patterson at their next meeting, too. But we have 9 cities. I don't mind going around all the cities, but I just wondered if the CEO has brought this up to the cities.
We did have a city manager's meeting last Thursday. I was not in attendance at that meeting, so we did not have an opportunity to speak with them. In the spirit of true confessions, I had already written myself a note. I was supposed to be bringing you back a letter for the chairman's approval to send to all of the cities requesting that they consider the scrap metal and junk dealers ordinance at this morning's meeting. That will be on your agenda for next Tuesday for your consideration. You have my apologies for that. I have talked to several of the city managers individually, however, and I'm reaching out to each of them individually pending their August meeting at which I'll be in attendance. I'm anticipating that with the board's approval of the letter that we can send a letter to the city councils and mayors and city managers as early as next Tuesday.
Okay. Just on another item that I'd like to say, we did have our cleanup and community cleanup in South Modesto last week on June 30th. It was a very successful event. A lot of community cooperation. I don't know how many tons of garbage we hauled off, but it was considerable. And among the garbage was 900 tires, so it was very successful. We had a sheriff's department there. It was very helpful. And the environmental resources, the code enforcement, and I was there myself. So soon we're going to do a cleanup in Bret Hart as we get everything arranged. But the one in the Park Lawn area was very successful. One other thing I think is worth mentioning, that the Westside Healthcare Task Force is going to have its third meeting on July 19th. This task force includes 3 cities, one in Merced County and Destin, the cities of Newman and Patterson, Del Cordial Healthcare District, and the Westside Healthcare District, and we have now included Golden Valley Health Center and Sutter Gould Medical. So it's quite a group that we've put together to try and work on building some facilities on the west side. The progress has been good. We've got a long ways to go, but we're working together well.
I think you're being a little modest. I heard on the cleanup day you were out there with a shovel in hand, right alongside everybody else picking up trash.
That's right. I was 4 hours in a garbage bin.
There's a headline.
Yeah, I know. The newspaper doesn't put that in there. But, you know, I was there to help, too. We had county staff, so we I was excited about getting that cleanup done, and I was there to lend a hand.
Any other Board of Supervisor reports? Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, I do have several items. The first one relates to a phone call I received yesterday. If any member of the board has an interest in traveling to Virginia this weekend and attending the annual NACO conference, please let me know. CSAC is interested in having a representative from Stanislaus County. I had indicated to them that I was not aware that there was any board member planning on making that trip back east. On the legislative front, the governor has met with legislative leaders for several hours this week. Both Democrats and Republicans are arguing over whether there have been adequate numbers of budget cuts. SB 315, which is reimbursement for cafeteria inspections, is meeting with quite a bit of resistance, and the hearing is set for tomorrow. AB 151, which will allow corrections officers to serve as bailiffs in our courts, is through both houses and is on the governor's desk now. We would expect a signature on that in short order, which will provide additional law enforcement resources to the sheriff. Our negative bailout bill, SB 215, has come back again as SB 342. It is temporarily stalled. They originally set it for hearing last week, but it's stalled over political argument not related to SB 342, but just mostly related to what happens in Sacramento this time of year. At the federal level, things are starting to move right now. Senator Feinstein has put an earmark of $150,000 for a communications request in the Senate Justice State Bill, which is a real coup for Stanislaus County and recognition by our senator that the county is working hard on our interoperability issues. Energy and water earmark package will be considered in the House on Thursday, so we should hear news on Orstemba initially sometime next week. That was another project that we had taken back with us. Also coming up will be Senate Committee Action on Transportation Bill, which could hold funding for Tama Twelve River Regional Park project, the third project that we took back with us. So all of the projects we've identified this year's priorities are still in play, and significant work is being done by our legislative leadership to support the county and the city's efforts.
We do have closed session today, if that can be announced.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. One item, Conference of Legal Counsel on Suspended Litigation. The facts have arisen, which has significant exposure to the county. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B, anticipate no announcement.
We'll adjourn the closed session.